It's not the first light bulb I've knocked out. Thank you all for coming, and thank you particularly, Paul, for making this happen for us. I'll read for a short time here. I'm going to start off by reading a poem about my first wife. It's called Yelling. Oh, when I think of all the places my ex-wife yelled at me. Throughout the house. In the kitchen, and in the bathroom, and in the living room, and on the stairs, in the basement by the washing machine, and standing by the bookcase, throwing books and yelling. She yelled at the supermarket checkout counter when I thumbed through a copy of Watch Your Weight, and on the corner of Randolph and Michigan during the biggest blizzard in 15 years. In the backyard, her voice growing hoarse and raw with the madness her mother and grandmother and great-great-grandmother bequeathed to her. She yelled until the neighbors looked over our rickety back fence. Then she yelled at them for listening. In the car, especially in the comfort of the car, on a 5-minute trip to Burger King or a 10-hour drive to another state, she yelled about the traffic and her grievances at work and what I had or hadn't done that day. She bitched and bellyached, she fretted, carped, and groaned. She delivered tongue lashings and gave everyone every last piece of her mind. She bewailed and bemoaned her treatment at the hands of strangers. She bellowed, griped, groused, and grumbled. She even kvetched occasionally, but primarily she yelled. She yelled at midday and midnight, and in the twilight, nothing about her voice, the slightest bit crepuscular. She yelled at noon, and in the afternoon, and early in the dawn, before the stars had faded, before I'd fully come awake. From what I hear, she's doing fine without me there to listen, alone in the house I gladly signed away, alone with the wide world that made her so desperately unhappy. Alone, alone, but yelling still. Well, in a little bit, I've been reading an anti-Trump poem at every reading we've done, so I've got a new one up my sleeve here in a little bit, but this is sort of like a preamble to that. It's called Jamestown, which is the earliest settlement in America, and otherwise pretty self-explanatory. Oh, America, let us celebrate your miserable beginnings. This feeble fort thrown up on the banks of a foul, salty river by adventurers hoping to cash in on a new world they thought would forfeit its treasures as easily as the whores of Southwark Snooze surrendered their sweet goods. It didn't work that way. Gold was not forthcoming. Imported vines perished. Silkworms shriveled. In their damp lean-tos, the alien men and their few tattered women faced winter and typhoid fever, dysentery, and sloth. The natives were equally unimpressed by the thatched roof church and the invisible nugatory god who ruled it. Yes, it was here, brooding by his fire, that John Smith intuited the meager necessities of empire. Taking stock of his assets, certain numbers of dice, colored beads, musket, and cannon, he realized that as long as a single Englishman remained alive to dream of pillage, no kingdom of mere savages, whether noble or bloodthirsty, could long endure. Tapping out the embers of his clay pipe, he strolled to the bulwarks, somewhere beyond that forest of Tupelo and tall marsh grass, awaited a land so ripe for the fucking that beneath his rusted armor, the captain who had beheaded Turks and skewered pirates, who thought he'd never be boar rot again, was strangely stirred. And I'll finish with this book here, poem called Axe. My poems are mostly about how bad people are. Give a man an axe and get out of his way. He'll hew the palm trees on the promenade and chop down his own backyard fence. He'll smash his son-in-law's violin. He'll wreck the piano in the school cafeteria and the one huddled harmless in the church. Sweat drips down his forehead. The sharp blade biting into wood sounds like an undiscovered mark of punctuation, something more cogent than our current exclamation point. In the right man's hands, the heft of an axe handle feels as certain as a steering wheel. And how am I doing time?
Are you fine?
Yeah, I'm going to hold the Trump poem until the end, just to sort of, you know. Actually, I don't think I'm going to read from Like a Soprano, because this is a book that has one poem for every one of the 86 episodes of The Sopranos, and it's hard to just read it in the middle of it. But if you're interested, I do have a copy for sale. Read a couple of poems about the Sistine Chapel. I'm sure that just about everybody here has been there. If you've been there during this particular month, July, you may remember how crowded it is. This is called Sistine Chapel, July. There's nothing holy about this place. Or if there is, it's only the miracle that so many people can be crammed so tightly together without brawling or fucking or forming a splinter government. From his central spot in the ceiling, the Lord God, bearded and muscular, looks down on us, his creations. The balding older woman who's dyed her hair bright red, the walling baby, the gossiping teenagers, the tour guides who won't shut up. The French guy keeps stepping on my foot. The entire seething, sweaty mess he set in motion with his outstretched fingertip. And this is actually one that has a little bit of hope in the end. The deluge. So the poem describes the panel, but it's not a famous one, but it's one of my favorites. The deluge after Michelangelo. How kind they've suddenly all become. Now the torrent has forced them onto the last two stony scraps of land. Father carrying his fainted son, husband bearing his wife, mother cuddling one child while the other clings to her leg. Though it's too late, it's always too late, they're finally looking out for one another, cradling the weak and sick, reaching to catch up those floundering in the flood. You'd think despair would sound the only note, but nothing ever really douses hope. Just look at that man lugging on his back everything he's ever earned. Or those two others floating a heap of plates and bowls on an overturned table, as though anyone here still had time to pause and eat a meal. Meanwhile, the lone lucky family sails away into the welcoming gale on a homemade raft. The solitary dove in its dovecot beating its wings like a prisoner in his tower, waving goodbye to a host of departing friends. I have two Trump poems. I'm just going to read one of them. The other one, the one I'm not going to read describes Donald Trump choking and falling to the ground and everyone around him hoping that he's going to die. I've just given it away. So he doesn't. I realize this is on MP3 and that's okay. This is called A Hymn for the Times. Every day's a nightmare, so we check our phones day long. Do we still have health care from the man who's never wrong? The man who's never wrong can't stand those who disagree. As payback, he might lead us straight into World War III. Some people call him Hitler or an orange Mao Zedong. His hands than yours are littler. The man who's never wrong. The man who's never wrong claims his brains are very big. Don't press him for promises. If you do, then he'll renege. His thinking's always hazy. You could even say headstrong. Or better, feckin' crazy. The man who's never wrong. The man who's never wrong is rarely ever right. After his reign of darkness, will there be a place for light? Thank you all.